This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Michigan's performing arts groups are grappling with how social distancing during the COVID-19 pandemic will affect production seasons, both now and into the fall and beyond. At the same time, many ensembles are trying to devise some new ways to stay connected with their audiences. For Plowshares Theater Company, an African-American organization in Detroit, this challenging national moment also emphasizes why creative communities, perhaps now more than ever, need Black storytelling. With us is Gary Anderson. He's producing artistic director of Plowshares and also the creator of a new podcast called Black Theater Matters. Gary Anderson, welcome back to Stateside.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You know, the last time we spoke, you were in rehearsal for this Vanguard production and looking forward to the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about what's happened for Plowshares since then?
Well, we were about to go into rehearsal with a world premiere of a brand new play that we were very excited about, Roost by Lee Edward Colson II. And the governor put in her executive order, which was to shut down all operations in the state roughly on the 23rd of March, basically 7 days before we were supposed to go in rehearsal. And that meant that we had to postpone everything at that point, not knowing when or if we were going to be able to mount the show. And now, June 1st, it's clear to us that we're not going to be able to do the show anytime within the next 7-8 months. So we're at this point starting to look at mounting live performances in front of an audience no earlier than February of 2021, or actually in spring of 2021, basically a year from now.
Wow. I mean, for those who don't know, ticket revenue is not a small part of the economics of any live theater.
Right.
In as much as live theaters also have a great need of their individual donors and the philanthropic community, mm-hmm. but that's devastating, basically no revenue until winter 2021.
Well, we're going to begin a campaign actually this week to solicit contributions over the next several months for programming that we are going to be able to do. It took me a while to sit down and think about it, but my desire for how we move forward in this new altered state was to try to solve two problems. Solve the continued need of telling Black stories, and at the same time, also solve the greater need of building an audience and making those connections between audience members and the artists on an ongoing basis. And so I've come up with several different programs designed to put our art online in an attempt to try to continue those connections and in an attempt to try to maintain our connection to both our audience and our artists who desperately need opportunities to work.
Well, I want to ask you more about what you have in mind in terms of content, mm-hmm. but let me first ask about the artists that you just mentioned. You know, the artist's life is pretty precarious under the best of circumstances. How are your collaborators doing these days?
Well, in many cases, a lot of them are challenged, because they saw on an immediate basis all employment that they had booked completely eliminated. And so I've had a number of artists who, you know, are on some form of unemployment, or they're looking for assistance in some other fashion, at the same time also trying to create programming that potentially could get them employed, which many organizations are struggling with. I mean, this has been devastating for the arts and cultural community, because in many cases, that was the original gig economy. When you think about it, an actor, a director, designer, whomever, has to put together several jobs in a year to give them enough revenue to live off of. And at any point in time in that precarious balance, when one of those projects falls out, you find that they have to immediately replace it with something else, even if it does mean going to a regular 9-to-5 job. In this situation, all of those opportunities are taken off the table for them. And so they don't have a way of getting another arts-related job. And at the same time, they don't really have any opportunities in really getting employment in a regular 9-to-5 position. And so you have a group of people for whom every source of income has been eliminated for them, and that becomes extremely challenging.
So this is any commercials they might have booked, teaching gigs, or just work in other kinds of fields.
Exactly. Yeah, there might be a workshop that they could conduct, or in-school residency they could have done, or they could have gone back to waiting tables or selling insurance or doing real estate, whatever they had an additional skill set. But again, those things are also taken away from them.
What kind of content have you thought about producing in this period when in-person performances to a full house just aren't even possible?
Well, the content hasn't changed. It's actually heightened the importance of the work that we were doing. One of the aspects of Plowshares has been our play development and programming. In fact, we've been very proud at the fact that we developed a relationship on the development of new work. In the show I came to talk to you about earlier this year was a work that I had been developing with the playwright 2 years, 18 months. So we've created a program called Play On, where we're taking a lot of the scripts that had been sent to us in an option to put their readings online. So I'm going to be hiring actors to play the parts where they're going to record themselves. We're going to take all that and we're going to present that online in a live presentation on a regular schedule. The schedule is going to be announced later this week.
Wow.
Along with the plays. And the idea is that we'll also provide an opportunity for our audience who connects into it to be able to make comments, to give their observations, just as they would have if they were sitting in a theater watching it.
So it's sort of like an online workshop for the work?
Yeah. The idea is to create the opportunity for the work that we are devoted to that is actually part of our mission to be maintained in this circumstance.
Is it possible for playwrights to react to the moment fast enough to maybe think about forms of narrative that would work in that kind of online venue?
In some cases, speed is not our friend in the creation of art. It's important that a writer hear what is being presented to them as a reaction to their work and sit with that for a moment to process it and then respond in how they may choose to revise or not revise the work, or how they look at emphasizing certain things. I've worked with writers where comments both from myself and from a moderated audience has not necessarily seen changes modified in the specific area that we were discussing. But what happened was that the artist processed that information and they may have made developments across the field where some of the perspectives that were presented might have found themselves in the mouths of a character who didn't respond to the circumstances in the play prior to that. So there's a whole host of ways in which you can create the kind of environment you're looking for to provide the artist with the information that they need to respond to. And in the final analysis, I keep trying to say this because I've learned this too. In the final analysis, the play is the property of the playwright. I can be very passionate about what I think a writer can change, but that writer has to be confident that this is still their voice, even when they hear the comments of other artists.
My guest today is Gary Anderson, the producing artistic director of Plowshares Theater Company in Detroit. I have to say, I mean, I know this kind of interpretation is part of the job, but it sounds like a huge lift for a director to reinterpret work in a way that's going to mean something in the format that we're presenting right now.
It is extremely important for us to not forget what the charge of the artist is. We have a responsibility to basically heal civilization through how we bring up ideas and express points of view and perspective, even when we open up the dialogue for very frustrating and challenging conversations. That has not been abandoned because of our current circumstances. In fact, if the last week has taught us nothing else, it's made it very clear that there have been unheard people and unseen people in this country and across this planet that are demanding to be heard, demanding to be seen, and demanding that change occur. And I understand it's not easy, but if we let go of that responsibility, we abandon the very reason why artists are so vital to our civilization. We abandon the very purpose of why we exist.
The theater has always been a place where people can sit with truths by virtue of the fact that when they go to a play, they cannot simply switch off the screen. You know, they cannot switch to a different stream of social media.
Right.
There's an intimacy to the work that, you know, some people would argue really beats, you know, even some of the most powerful treatments that we've seen in film and streaming cinema in recent years. But at the same time, it really does rely on what you're saying for people to buy the ticket or, you know, tune into the stream in the mid-pandemic stage. Are you finding that people are coming to Plowshares for that right now, or that different audience members are coming right now for that?
That is our hope, and that is our effort. That's how our marketing strategy is designed, around people being aware of the fact that what we do is unique and critical. It's not just simply entertainment. We are finding that we're both soliciting and receiving support from audience members that we would not have naturally seen in our theater or supporting our work beforehand, which is good because that means that we're starting to do the work that we need to help our civilization heal. But we need to do more of it. We need to expand upon it. We need to continue to build on this and not stop. And our current circumstance does not give us the right to sit down and wait until everything is over. We have the opportunity to begin doing that healing now and making those connections now. But people have to be willing. The will is so critical at this point. The will is so critical. We have to have the artists willing to actually engage and bring their best talents to bear. We have to have the audience equally willing to bear and bring their open minds to hearing the message that is being presented.
In the midst of everything else that you're doing right now, you're also in development for a podcast, a new podcast called Black Theater Matters, as we mentioned. In the course of researching what kind of things you needed to talk about, what patterns did you see happening in Black theaters across the United States?
About 4 years ago, I was able to get a Kresge Artist Fellowship. It provided me with time and resources to go around the country and study the circumstances that other African-American theaters existed in. My original plan was to develop a business plan for the theater based on the best practices and models that I found around the country. And I did an extensive culling of what Black-led arts organizations across this country there were, and I was able to compile that. And then I began to do personal trips to several different regions. I went to New York, Chicago, Atlanta, Memphis, St. Louis, LA, and Portland, Oregon. And I stayed in contact over the line with other artists in Houston, in Virginia, in other parts of the country. And what I found was that a number of the challenges I've had, regardless of the size or the longevity or the stability of the organization, we were all dealing with similar circumstances. There was a real dearth in individual giving to African American theaters around this country. The average across the predominantly white institutions, you can see it range anywhere between 25 to 30%, sometimes almost up to 42% of their operating budget comes from individual giving. For African American theaters, the vast majority of those, it was less than 10%. There were only a handful that were doing better than that. That's a real statement, not necessarily of the support of the value that your community has, but the investment that your community has in your organization. In many cases, the funding culture's commitment over the last 30 years to different forms of diversity programming to support diversity in regional white theaters, like equity inclusion initiatives, cultural participation initiatives that was designed on getting large white theaters to integrate their boards, their staffs, their programming, had really not had any impact at all. That basically in 1989, before all this began, the majority of people in the arts community, in the theater community, the jobs that were being made were basically given away to whites, 78%. In 2016, when I did my work, it was roughly the same. It had not changed that much over almost a 30-year period. So that all these dollars that were invested in white institutions to diversify themselves had not changed culture or behavior or attitudes. There may have been some cosmetic differences, but it wasn't appreciable to make the difference that the funding community claimed that they were trying to support. At the same time, in many cases, African-American theaters, Hispanic, Latino, Native American theaters, Asian theaters found themselves being challenged in regards to being able to receive the same dollars for the same purpose, to diversify their audience, to diversify their boards, because for some reason, the initiative was designed only to serve the largest white institutions as they were going through changes in regards to their audiences. The majority of their audience dying off, younger audiences not being built at a sufficient amount to support these organizations. And so that all was impacting everybody in the entire Black theater community in some capacity. And I started seeing that with Black writers, Black talent going to work maybe as their first or second job in predominantly white institutions, that there was a talent drain across the Black theater community. I also saw that if you get all these funding sources that are coming, that are being reduced, if you've got talent pool that's being reduced, yet the need for your voice to be heard is still critical. You find yourself in a situation where your very survival is being impacted. And so the podcast is really designed to address those larger systemic issues, to begin a dialogue for us to start thinking about these issues and how we affect change for the positive.
We've been talking today with Gary Anderson of Plowshares Theater Company based in Detroit. His new podcast is Black Theater Matters, and you can look to the Plowshares Facebook page to stay up on productions that are happening online and in other ways in the months to come. Gary Anderson, it's good to hear your voice, and thanks for joining us today.
All right, you take it easy.